Welcome to this audio issue of The Big Secret on Wall Street, published and copyrighted by Porter & Company, all rights reserved. Please note that this recording was generated via AI and may contain minor transcription errors and pronunciation mistakes. Throughout this issue, I may reference charts, graphs, and imagery that can only be viewed on our website at porterandcompanyresearch.com. This issue was originally published on October 2, 2025. Zbigniew Brzezinski figured he'd just let his wife sleep. After all, she'd be dead in less than half an hour. She didn't deserve to spend her last 30 minutes terrified of the extinction-level nuclear event that was about to wipe out America. It was about 3 a.m. on November 9, 1979, and Brzezinski, National Security Advisor to President Jimmy Carter, had just gotten off the phone with an aide bringing the one piece of news no one wanted to hear during the U.S.-Soviet Cold War: 2,000 nuclear ballistic missiles inbound from the Soviet Union. Missile bases across the nation were already on alert, and 10 jet interceptors across the U.S. and Canada were aloft within minutes. It was the massive strike America had been prepping for since the end of World War II, all-out nuclear war with Russia. Brzezinski wasn't ready. Nobody was. He had just 6 minutes to confirm the attack, report it to the president, and then watch the world burn. The intel seemed pretty cut and dry. Alarms were blazing everywhere: NORAD, the U.S. Army's Fort Ritchie, and multiple other defense locations. After ticking quietly along underground for decades, the Semi-Automatic Ground Environment Air Defense System, SAGE, had finally detected a live threat. Or, had it? First built in the late 1950s and stretching across North America, SAGE was a 27-unit network of concrete bunkers and sci-fi-looking, 250-ton computerized brains, tended mostly by lackadaisical grunts. The computers were designed to track radar signals, spot and respond to possible air attacks, alerting authorities, and, in some cases, even deploying weapons without any input. In many ways, the SAGE threat detection network functioned like the internet before the internet, and so far, it had done its job pretty damn well. 60 seconds before protocol dictated that Brzezinski dial President Carter, the National Security Advisor's phone rang again. False alarm. Human error, of the most humiliating kind. Somewhere in the heart of a bunker in Colorado, a distracted lieutenant colonel had popped a tape of wargame exercises into the wrong console. The massive computerized brain of SAGE read the film as a real attack and set the wheels of nuclear war in motion for a heart-stopping 5 minutes. Brzezinski's wife slept through the whole thing, but the next morning brought nuclear-level fallout. The near disaster made the front page of the New York Times, and the already shaky U.S.-Soviet relationship deteriorated, with Soviet leader Leonid Brezhnev berating Jimmy Carter for putting the world in tremendous danger. Over the next several months, at least three more false alarms triggered the SAGE system, ultimately leading to its phase-out in the mid-80s, though the giant computerized bunkers remained and provided many a backdrop for cheesy sci-fi films. Somewhere in a basement lab at MIT, a weak-chinned little genius named J.C.R. Licklider was shaking his head and saying, "I told you so." Licklider, Lick, as he preferred to be called, was a psychologist by training, with a deep interest in how humans and machines interacted. He was also a brilliant futurist who designed or predicted much of the modern internet, information technology, and even artificial intelligence, 50 years ahead of his time, starting with the fateful moment he first descended into the bunkers at Sage back in the late 50s. At the time, SAGE top brass were transitioning from analog to digital computing, and they brought Lick on board to study what they called human factors in programming. From the minute he sat down at one of SAGE's flickering green consoles, a first in computing history, up till now, output had all been punch cards. He was hooked, the age-old romance of a man glued to a screen. He also had some major concerns, and he wasn't shy about sharing them. Artificial intelligence, real stupidity. In Lick's view as a psychologist, SAGE was designed backwards. Its primary brain was a computer, and it required a lot of low-level human nursemaids to help operate it. It was easy for error to creep in when the humans involved were grunts, rather than thinkers, like the absent-minded colonel sticking a tape in the wrong slot. But erasing the human element wouldn't help matters. Lick felt that a fully automated system, without people, a pure artificial intelligence, AI, would be even more terrifying. SAGE already had whispers of this technology, and it frequently malfunctioned. It had a fully automated fleet of ground-to-air missiles that were prone to pop up and deploy by accident. An engineer's report on the problem, inadvertent erection of the IM-99A, in his own words, raised a few eyebrows. Lick's thought for AI was that humans and computers should partner in symbiosis, but with humans in the lead. He loved the massive, distributed network model SAGE offered, but he felt that the primary brains involved should be human. Smart humans, the ones he referred to as the thinkers, not the grunts. Lick explained, Men will set the goals, formulate the hypotheses, determine the criteria, and perform the evaluations. Computing machines will do the routinizable work that must be done to prepare the way for insights and decisions in technical and scientific thinking. In 1957, with all these ideas percolating in his head, Lick sat down and wrote out a blueprint based on an improved version of Sage, a thinking machine that would allow computers all over the country to talk to one another. But the main minds involved would be human, not robotic, and they'd use the network infrastructure for creative collaboration, which he called the Library of the Future or the Intergalactic Network. Inspired by Sage's far-flung web of command centers, this network would allow users to work simultaneously from different monitors connected to a central brain. He dubbed this bandwidth-saving concept time-sharing, nothing to do with your pushy uncle in the Poconos. If you think this sounds a bit like the modern internet, you'd be correct. Lick kept refining these ideas over the course of his career and was eventually a seminal figure in designing ARPANET, the proto-internet used by the U.S. Department of Defense. Today, he's often called the father of the internet. Turns out, he's the father of software as a service, SaaS, too. When the brass at Sage showed little interest in updating their systems based on his recommendations, Lick took his ideas on sharing computer bandwidth to his next place of employment, MIT. There his team launched the influential timesharing software Multics and eventually spawned a whole industry of shared interoffice networks and storage software. Today, the timesharing industry is going strong, a $400 billion market that's expected to more than double by 2030. These days, it's primarily hosted on the cloud and known as SaaS, as people tap into infinite storage space without needing to host large amounts of data on their home computers. But it's directly descended from Lick's work at Sage and his blueprint for creating a truly Sage system. In this issue, we are recommending one of the foremost timesharing companies in the world. Interestingly, it's a business that's being unfairly beaten down over fears that AI can do its suite of automated tasks faster and better and cheaper. But that's where Licklider's original work comes back into play. The naysayers are overlooking a crucial human element at the heart of this company, a dynamic customer profiling database, curated by people, that can't be replicated or ousted by a machine. This company, like the original intergalactic network envisioned by Lick, is built around human thinkers, and the robot infrastructure around the outside is just there to help. Luckily for us, the market, which is run by machines or less than stellar human brains, hasn't cottoned on to this distinction yet, which gets us in at an attractive price point. A greatly misunderstood business. This month's The Big Secret on Wall Street looks at a stock that is down in the dumps on the perception that it is an AI loser. There is a lot of hype behind AI, and many of the investment darlings are likely to end up disappointing, as did many of the companies 25 years ago during the dot-com boom. That said, the proliferation of AI technology is very real. And just like in the dot-com era, there will be winners and there will be losers. Despite years of steady growth and a market-leading position in its industry, investors have abandoned this stock now because they believe the business is fading. It is being viewed almost like an old economy company, even though it is actually a technological pioneer, particularly when it comes to AI. This company is poised to flip that narrative, likely sending the stock higher as investors ultimately realize it is actually an AI winner. Salesforce NYSE, CRM, is a global leader in cloud-based software, specializing in customer relationship management, CRM, solutions. With a $230 billion market cap, it generates close to $40 billion in annual revenue. Salesforce empowers businesses of all sizes to connect with customers in innovative ways through its integrated platform. The company's core offerings include tools for sales, customer service, marketing automation, analytics, and application development. These products are all designed to enhance customer engagement and streamline business processes. With a strong focus on digital transformation, Salesforce serves industries ranging from small startups to Fortune 500 enterprises, enabling them to drive growth, improve efficiency, and build stronger customer relationships. Mark Benioff, the current chair and CEO, founded Salesforce in 1999 along with Parker Harris, now CTO of Slack and pictured above with Benioff, Dave Mellenhoff, and Frank Dominguez. The company aimed to revolutionize enterprise software by delivering CRM solutions via the cloud, a novel approach at the time when most software was installed on premises. The company's first product focused on Salesforce automation, hosted on Salesforce.com. Installing software on premises was cumbersome. Software had to be put onto each computer, machine by machine, quite an undertaking for large organizations with thousands of employees. But the work didn't stop there. Anyone who uses the Windows operating system on their laptop or owns an iPhone knows that the software often needs updating for things like new features or better security. Back then, every time that happened, Tech support would have to buy the updated software on a disk and install it on every machine. Again, one by one. Salesforce was a pioneer of the SaaS concept, which JCR Licklider built the groundwork for, a software licensing model that allows access to software on a subscription basis using external servers. Each user can access the software through the internet rather than having to install the software on the user's computer individually. This might seem pretty normal and basic today. Basically, every software concept operates like this. But it would be hard to overstate how revolutionary this was at the time. Salesforce launched its first CRM platform under a SaaS model, introducing the concept of cloud-based CRM. CRM software is a cloud-based platform designed to help businesses manage customer relationships, streamline sales processes, and improve overall customer engagement. Think of Salesforce as a centralized hub that manages customer data, interactions, and business processes. The software provides tools to track leads, manage customer accounts, close deals, and deliver customer support, all while offering insights through analytics. The benefits of cloud-based architecture are indisputable. Hosting on the cloud means that no on-premises hardware or software is required. Users access the CRM from a web browser or mobile app. That nuance is taken for granted today, but in a recent poll from tech survey leader Qualtrics, 77% of employees globally performed work-related tasks on a smartphone in 2023, and that number is projected to rise to 91% by 2027. None of this would be possible without the cloud-based SaaS concepts that Salesforce innovated. The Salesforce product lineup. There are several aspects to the functionality of the Salesforce CRM. Sales Cloud manages leads, opportunities, and sales pipelines. Sales teams can track customer interactions, forecast sales, and automate tasks like email follow-ups. Service Cloud focuses on customer support, including case management, ticketing, and self-service portals for customers. Marketing Cloud enables personalized marketing campaigns and email automation. Commerce Cloud supports e-commerce with tools for online stores and order management. Tableau provides analytics which allow customers to make real data-driven decisions on how to improve their processes. Salesforce grew rapidly after its initial launch, gaining many early adopters. In 2001, the company introduced its first major event, Dreamforce, now its flagship annual conference. Today, it attracts about 180,000 attendees from around the world, bringing together the Salesforce community to connect and share industry insights as well as the latest trends. Salesforce continued to innovate organically over the years, but also has done some notable acquisitions to bolster its presence. In more recent years, those include Demandware in 2016 in the e-commerce space, MuleSoft in 2018 to enhance integration, Tableau in 2019 to strengthen analytics capabilities, Slack in 2021, integrating it into the Salesforce ecosystem to compete in workplace collaboration. This continued innovation and aggressive deal-making have been a key part of the story of Salesforce. Salesforce has 72,000 employees globally, serving some 150,000 customers worldwide and generating $40 billion in annual revenue. A bit more than 20% of revenue comes from the Sales Cloud Group, 25% from Service Cloud category, and 15% from Marketing and Commerce Cloud. And then there is Data Cloud, a platform for unifying fragmented customer data from any source into a coherent and harmonized profile. It was responsible for about 3% of the company's sales in 2024, but looks to be a key part of Salesforce's future. Salesforce revenue has increased at a compound annual growth rate of 24% since the company went public in 2004. Salesforce revenue has never been down year over year. Even through very challenging periods like the global financial crisis or the COVID pandemic, revenue continued its upward march. However, in recent years, the revenue growth algorithm has changed. For years, Salesforce was putting up at least 25% revenue growth. Then in 2023, growth began to slow, down to 18%. That was still a very robust clip. But in 2024 and 2025, revenue growth further sagged to the low double-digit level. And current guidance for this fiscal year remains in the high single-digit range. Meanwhile, adjusted operating margins had stalled in the mid to high teens for several years. That might have been acceptable when revenue was showing strong growth. But when growth came down without significant operational improvement, investors took notice. By the end of 2022, Salesforce shares had fallen more than 50% from their high a year earlier. Investors questioned the company's aggressive acquisition strategy, which had consumed over $50 billion over the prior 5 years, including buying up Slack and Tableau. At the same time, shareholders became more vocal about bloated sales and marketing expenses, running at roughly 30% of revenue compared to 20% for software peers. Activist investors began to swirl, taking stakes in the company and pressuring management to make changes. Big names such as Starboard Capital, Inclusive Capital, Value Act, Elliott Management, and Third Point all had taken stakes in Salesforce. With the share price down and big name investors applying very public pressure, the company had to respond. In January 2023, management announced a 10% reduction in its workforce, or roughly 8,000 job cuts. Then in March 2023, the company added Value Act CEO Mason Morfit and two additional new executives to its board. Morfit, with prior experience at Microsoft and Adobe, focused on profitable growth and tying incentives to cloud targets. As a result, management changed its capital allocation priorities. The M&A committee was disbanded, instead allocating funds toward more share repurchases. After making no significant stock buybacks prior to 2022, Salesforce has since repurchased over $24 billion in shares, roughly 10% of the current market capitalization. The initiatives that were put in place produced real results. Operating margins improved to 23% in 2023, and by 2024 they had jumped above 30%. Then there was another step up to 33% in 2025, and guidance is for margins to increase to just over 34% in the current fiscal year. So the company turned around operations and met activist shareholder demands. The stock price responded, rising from a low of $127 at the end of 2022 to $369 in early 2025, a 190% increase in just over 2 years. The activists quieted down as one might expect after those types of gains. So it should have been smooth sailing for Salesforce going forward, right? Not so fast. Artificial intelligence enters the picture. Just as it seemed like it was going to be all sunshine and rainbows, a new threat has emerged for Salesforce. This threat has raised new apparent risks to the business, but also has created a potential buying opportunity for investors willing to do the research. And that is the threat of AI. Today, most people think of search platforms like Google or ChatGPT when they think of AI. This narrow use case has been revolutionary but not really revenue generating. Many investors viewed the internet in much the same way during the dot-com bubble of the 1990s as a potentially transformative technology that few, if any, companies would ever be able to actually monetize. Clearly, the internet opened tremendous revenue opportunities in areas like e-commerce and advertising. But beyond that, the internet revolution created tremendous operating efficiencies that have helped virtually all companies improve their businesses and reduce significant costs. Similarly, one can envision countless ways to improve efficiency as AI technology improves over time. That's the positive potential of AI. But then there are the risks. With any revolutionary technology, there is always the chance that a legacy business model is disrupted by a better methodology. The rapid advancement of AI has heightened perceived risks in the software sector, particularly for SaaS providers. Investors fear AI could disrupt traditional software models by enabling in-house software development or commoditizing services. It would be easy to dismiss commentary from fledgling AI software startups making bold claims that they are poised to disrupt the software industry. After all, those companies need to create buzz and raise money to grow. The dot-com bubble had plenty of companies like that which turned out to be losers. But the notion that AI can be used to write software code isn't just coming from upstarts. It is coming from industry thought leaders and company behemoths. So investors would be wise to take notice. On Joe Rogan's podcast, The Joe Rogan Experience, Meta, META, CEO Mark Zuckerberg said the following. This year, we at Meta, as well as the other companies working on this, AI, are going to have AI that can be a mid-level engineer and write code. In the beginning, it will be really expensive to run. To get it to be more efficient. Then over time, a lot of the code in our apps, including the AI that we generate, is going to be built by AI engineers instead of people engineers. AI research company Anthropic CEO Dario Amodei recently said that he thinks AI will be writing 90% of all code within 3 to 6 months. Amazon, AMZN, has already said it will hire fewer software engineers due to AI. OpenAI's CEO Sam Altman warned of a fast fashion era for software, where AI accelerates cheap, rapid production, eroding demand for SaaS as tools become easier and cheaper to build in real time, disrupting the traditional SaaS model powered by long-term commitments. Programmers already use AI tools to help create and optimize code. AI-powered tools such as OpenAI Codex, Amazon Q Developer, and Google Gemini Code Assist are able to generate portions of code or even write entire blocks. The tools analyze patterns in programming languages and apply that to create output. It certainly isn't surprising that investors are already starting to worry about the role of AI in coding. The NASDAQ 100, QQQ, is up 17% year-to-date, YTD. The broader software industry looks to be keeping pace, with the iShares Expanded Tech Software Sector ETF, IGV, up roughly the same. Meanwhile, shares of Salesforce are down 26% in just the first 9 months of the year, underperforming the broader NASDAQ 100 by 43%. That seems like a huge outlier at first glance. But then have a look at other prominent SaaS stocks. Adobe, ADBE, a provider of web design and photo and video editing software, is down 18% YTD. Atlassian, TEAM, which develops collaboration tools for software management, is down 30%. HubSpot, HUBS, another CRM provider, has seen its shares drop 26% this year. When facing a great unknown, it isn't unusual for investors to shoot first and ask questions later. That certainly seems to be the case with these companies in general, and Salesforce in particular, with investors punishing anything with a hint of SaaS exposure. And Salesforce, for now at least, is getting put in that bucket of at-risk companies from AI. Retention rate, why investors are getting Salesforce wrong. Painting all these stocks with the same brush ignores the nuances of the Salesforce business model. One important point that is being overlooked is that the Salesforce offering, and CRM software generally, produces a high degree of recurring revenue. Part of that consistency, and what keeps Salesforce growing year after year, is that the company loses relatively few customers over time. Retention rate measures the percentage of customers that a company holds onto from the prior year. Salesforce boasts a 92% retention rate, illustrating the stickiness of the product and the company's business model. Providing a greater number of potential products to customers is key. This is where those acquisitions come into play, despite some of the shareholder controversy, as Salesforce used those deals to fill in white space in its overall portfolio. The value to Salesforce of a broader offering goes beyond a greater share of customer wallets. Customers using more products means Salesforce is that much more integrated into that customer's process. That increased level of reliance makes it harder for a customer to switch away to another provider. And Salesforce has the data to prove this stickiness to its products. The average retention rate for a customer using two Salesforce products is about 88%. But when a customer is using four products, retention improves to roughly 93%. And for that customer using seven products, retention rates are 98%. Selling a bundle of products to customers obviously creates a clear revenue benefit to Salesforce. But that revenue benefit isn't linear. It is exponential. The average annual recurring revenue, ARR, of a customer that uses two products is 3x greater than a customer using a single product. That same revenue is 9x higher for a customer using three products, and it is over 300x higher for a customer using seven products. Another critical strength is the network effect of Salesforce's product offering. A network effect is a phenomenon in which increased numbers of participants improve the value of a good or service. Think about any commerce exchange site, like eBay or the NASDAQ. If only a few people show up to sell things, there wouldn't be much of a selection for shoppers. And if there were only a few potential buyers, the realized prices probably wouldn't be very strong. But eBay and the NASDAQ facilitate many millions of transactions every single day. That increased density makes the offering that much more valuable to all users. Salesforce is the leading CRM provider with more than 20% market share, according to a study from the International Data Corporation. That's larger than the next four leading players combined. The company benefits from strong brand loyalty, and it has a massive user base of over 150,000 customers. And its annual Dreamforce event, below, reinforces its thought leadership and customer lock-in through community engagement with 180,000 attendees. All of that is demonstrative of the network effect at Salesforce. Another clear example of network effects at Salesforce is AppExchange, a marketplace for third-party apps Salesforce launched in 2006. Today, AppExchange is Salesforce's enterprise cloud marketplace, offering a wide range of solutions including apps, components, and consulting services. Salesforce partners create and publish solutions on AppExchange. Then customers are able to browse a list of potential applications, test them out in a demo, and install them into their own organization. How successful has this been? AppExchange has become the largest marketplace for enterprise solutions with over 10 million app installs. AppExchange also helps drive the company's high customer retention rate. The data has clearly shown that the more products a customer uses, the more entrenched Salesforce becomes and the less likely a customer is to switch away. Well, 90% of Salesforce customers use AppExchange apps, making it another part of that multi-product competitive moat. So we know Salesforce has massive reach and benefits from the positive forces of network effects. But how does that help insulate the company from the threat of AI? Salesforce is gathering loads of information from customers every day. The company's vast ecosystem, with platforms like Sales Cloud, Service Cloud, and Tableau, hosts enormous amounts of customer data. And because of the company's relative share versus competitors, we know that its data collection is unmatched by even its largest peers in the industry. let alone fledgling startups. Why is this important? Because an AI model is only as good as the data it is trained on. Salesforce's data is a critical asset for training AI models, giving the company a huge head start in developing tailored AI solutions like its Agentforce platform. Salesforce and AI, a critical match. Agentforce, which uses agentic AI, is Salesforce's AI platform. Agentic AI is an advanced form of AI that can automatically achieve specific goals with minimal human supervision. Traditional AI models operate with predefined constraints and need human intervention to function properly. Salesforce designed the Agentforce system to deploy autonomous AI agents. Users are able to build, customize, and manage these intelligent agents, which are powered by large language models, LLM, using those models and prompts to act across various operating workflows. The AI agents can access real-time data to make decisions. They interact with employees and systems. And perhaps most importantly, they can learn and improve through better training. Imagine an AI agent which can update records or process transaction approvals. Agentforce allows operational tasks to be offloaded to AI agents, automating a whole host of processes and allowing companies to run more efficiently. This isn't just giving mundane low-level tasks to the agent. Think of all the processes at a company that require multiple forms to be filled out, with multiple fields on each form, and multiple departments within the organization that need to be involved. There are tremendous inefficiencies and bottlenecks that come from manual data entry mistakes, delays from one or multiple parties or other problems, all of which cause friction with customers. The Salesforce AI agent can do all of this, and it not only does it faster, but also better. The potential applications here are incredibly far-reaching. Agentforce can improve healthcare by cutting down on the administrative time of healthcare companies using the Salesforce platform, leading to better results for patients. It can improve inventory management in the manufacturing sector. It can expedite transaction underwriting in financial services. It can speed up transaction processing in e-commerce. If an operation processes forms or data from customers or vendors, Agentforce can likely improve on it. That basically applies to everything. This didn't happen by accident. Salesforce has been preparing for the AI revolution for some time now. Back in 2014, founder and CEO Mark Benioff made a proclamation during an internal meeting, saying, "Salesforce will become an AI-first company." The company followed up that statement with its first foray into AI later that year with the acquisition of RelateIQ, adding automation to its product offerings. In 2015, the company started working on an AI initiative to determine how to prioritize open sales leads, a problem that sales teams had seemingly faced forever. In response, the company developed its opportunity scoring app and deployed it internally as one of the company's first predictive AI capabilities. The next evolution of the process was Einstein AI, introduced in 2016 to embed machine learning into the company's products. Einstein AI has continued to grow and evolve, becoming the leading AI technology for CRM software. Today, Einstein AI generates more than 1 trillion predictions each week, a long way from when the company celebrated only 7 billion a week in 2018. To get to that point has required continued vision and commitment on the part of Salesforce that AI was the wave of the future, and the company has continued to invest heavily into Agentforce. It is still very early days in terms of the progress of companies truly implementing AI into their core functions, but Salesforce is already gaining traction on its initiatives. Investors can see it in the numbers. More than 50% of Fortune 500 companies are already on the Data Cloud platform, according to Salesforce Management. The company now has over 6,000 paid Agentforce deals and 12,500 total Agentforce customers. That's up from 8,000 total customers at the prior update. Data Cloud and Agentforce ARR is up to $1.2 billion, a 120% increase from the same point a year ago. And 40% of new Agentforce bookings were existing customers growing their usage. Salesforce has a wider reach than any AI upstart could hope to have, and thus has access to better training data that it can leverage through Agentforce. That's an opportunity for the company to shift the narrative that Salesforce is actually an AI winner rather than an AI loser. But there is other evidence of this as well. Let's go back to the performance of AppExchange. Industry tracking data shows that the exchange offered a little over 5,000 apps a year ago, and today offers close to 6,000. That's interesting, because despite the concerns over AI disintermediating software development, growth here remains very robust. Once again, this shows the power of a network effect. Small individual AI developers wouldn't be able to replicate this even if they are able to create the apps being sold. A product like AppExchange, which both has a high usage rate and would be difficult, if not impossible, to be replaced by AI, shows why Salesforce should be more insulated from disruption than many investors fear. Salesforce clearly realizes the advantage it has from having proprietary data and entrenched customers. and that's an edge it is moving to protect. In June, prominent technology site The Information reported that Salesforce blocked other software firms from searching or storing Slack messages. These restrictions mean third-party applications won't be able to index or copy these messages, effectively locking them within the Slack and Salesforce universe. The company can try to spin this as an effort to protect the privacy of customer data, and that may certainly be the case, but what this really does is prevent any upstart enterprise AI platform from integrating this information into its workflows. Again, an AI model is only as good as the data on which it is trained. Expect Salesforce to make more moves like this in an effort to not only protect against AI-led disruption, but to capitalize on it. Having good data has its advantages. The company's latest quarterly report showed the pieces are starting to fall in place. There is the increased traction at DataCloud and Agentforce already discussed. More broadly, overall company subscription revenue increased 9% in the quarter, the fourth consecutive quarter of growth at that same rate, providing real evidence of stabilizing growth, step one in the turnaround after a multi-year period of deceleration. And backlog, or the amount of booked revenue waiting to be realized, has grown at a 10% to 11% clip for the last several quarters as well. That's a good sign, because backlog is effectively a leading indicator for future revenue growth. But the leading indicators for that backlog are even more encouraging. Management highlighted that its business pipeline, or all the sales leads the team is working on, is growing in the high teens. And the pipeline of big deals looks even more robust with almost 20% growth. All of this points to the potential for a revenue re-acceleration at Salesforce in the near future, and that would certainly change the investor narrative around AI. Still, this only tells part of the story. Our discussion so far has dealt only with the sales side of the ledger. It is ironic that software investors are honing in on revenue risks, because so much of the broad AI story is about improving cost efficiency. So short-sighted investors are looking in one direction, toward the sales side of the equation. Meanwhile, Salesforce has been a leader in using AI to cut its own costs. In a June interview on financial news network CNBC, Salesforce CEO Marc Benioff said that AI was already accounting for 30% to 50% of the company's workload. He estimated that internally the company had reached 93% accuracy with its AI technology. Remember that humans clearly don't have 100% accuracy on anything. And given that AI tools should be operating far faster than traditional workflows, a 93% hit rate like this should be viewed as a very positive result. Note that Benioff said at the same time that other vendors were at much lower levels because they don't have as much data and metadata to reach higher accuracy. Again, that illustrates Salesforce's competitive advantage in CRM as it relates to AI. Not only does the company's better data serve as a competitive moat against external threats, it also provides a better internal opportunity to improve its own workflows and profitability. Salesforce isn't just paying lip service to the notion of leveraging AI in its own operations. The company has followed through here with tangible cost-saving measures. Benioff said in a more recent interview in early September that the company has reduced customer support roles to 5,000, down from 9,000. That's because the company has seen the number of support cases it handles fall and no longer needs to backfill support engineer roles due to Agentforce. Remember, this is still early innings for AI. Investors should look for similar cost improvement announcements down the road as the company remains at the forefront of the AI revolution. The market looks like it is underestimating Salesforce's business model and the potential effects of AI on the company. That kind of misperception creates opportunity for smart buyers willing to go against the grain of current consensus thinking. During the company's growth heyday, from 2016 to 2020, Salesforce stock consistently traded at elevated price to earnings, PE, ratios of around 60x. Those high multiples gradually fell as growth slowed. Over the last few years, the stock's PE multiple has generally been closer to 30x, half of where it was 5 years ago. But today, with the fear regarding the threat from AI hanging over the stock, CRM is trading at under 20x. That's the cheapest level this stock has been in the history of the company. The overall software group trades close to 35x earnings, but there's a big difference in multiples depending on a company's growth profile. High-growth companies increasing revenue 25% or higher like Shopify, SHOP, or Samsara, IoT, trade at 80x on average. Mid-level peers growing revenue in the mid-teens like HubSpot, HUBS, or Palo Alto Networks, PANW, average about 45x. And the slower sub-10% growth companies like Salesforce average closer to 20x. This paints a pretty clear picture of what Salesforce investors should be looking for. A re-acceleration of revenue growth back into the double-digit range in the next few years should lead to both improved earnings growth and a higher valuation more in line with both company history and current higher growth peers. Salesforce should earn close to $11.50 in earnings per share, EPS, in its 2026 fiscal year ending this January. But 2 years from now, as revenue accelerates, that number could be around $15. By then, investors should realize that Salesforce is actually an AI winner, and the associated improvement in revenue growth implies the stock's multiple can go back to 30x, where it was before AI panic set in. That would price the stock at $450, up over 80% from current levels. Action to take: buy Salesforce, NYSE, CRM, up to $265 per share. Porter & Company, Stevenson, Maryland. Thank you for being a paid subscriber to The Big Secret on Wall Street. We hope you enjoyed this audio issue. In addition to this issue, you should check out our top three buys, where we highlight three current portfolio picks that are at an attractive buy point today. You can find the top three buys under the Best Buys link on our site at porterandcompanyresearch.com.